I'm Joe Bendosky, and this is Start Writing. Travis is unavailable today due to some scheduling conflicts. He's pretty busy all through December, but we will still have him around for a discussion piece. Today, we have an interview with author Kerry Azara, and he has written multiple books. Most of them are collections of short stories, Haley's Gift, and eight other extraordinary tales, and his new book coming out called The Lottery Curse. One of the reasons we really wanted to talk to Kerry is that he's published with a company called Soup. And that is something or other publishing. It is a new kind of publishing where authors submit at first just the idea for their story, and essentially they gather community votes, and once they reach enough votes, they then gain a contract with something or other publishing, and an advance and an editor, and very much a traditional process from that point. But one of the things that is very different is that you're not going through an agent, and an editor is not the one making the final decision on whether or not you get to publish, but the community is. And so even before you start to write your book, there is a group of people who are interested in your idea and seeing it written as a story. So we're excited to talk to him and just kind of walk him through the process there and how that happened, and talk about his writing as well. And next week we'll actually have an interview with one of the creators of something or other they're publishing to dig into it even more. As for Kerry himself, his life has not been a straight path. He has had many twists and turns, losing his sister when he was 16 and struggling to regain direction. Since then, he's accomplished a number of goals, such as the pursuit of graduate degrees, a career in public health, VP of market research, president of a marketing company, AT Health LLC, raising a family, and rescuing a few dogs. He's published numerous articles, reports, and books along the ways that experience that have inspired him to be an author and to write short stories. And he even has a book, A Questionnaire Designed for Business Research. And so I'm very interested to see what he brings to the self-publishing industry as an individual with a background in marketing. So without any more delay, here's Kerry. I had a few problems with the early audio in Kerry's interview. It was couldn't even decipher what was being said. So I'll summarize what we missed and then jump in from there. We started talking about his experience in marketing and gathering his votes for something or other publishing. And he initially talked about LinkedIn, and then I was able to discover the problem and fix it when he started talking about Twitter. So that's where it jumps in. He does circle back, and we talk a lot more about LinkedIn later, so you're not really going to miss anything big. But so it does just kind of jump in right away. Just a heads up on the audio.
Twitter is also something you can develop and run relatively quickly, not as quickly as it used to. Twitter is really clamped down on the old, the whole, follow thing. You have to be a little more clever about it these days. But you certainly can develop an audience with Twitter. And in fact, there's an excellent series on the Soup site about using Twitter. So I recommend that to people.
Oh, yeah, excellent. So what have, I guess with LinkedIn, I mean, I see that like as an author, I've never really seen LinkedIn as a tool. I mean, with Twitter, it seems like it's kind of easy to track down various authors and do collaborative works. Is that a right. similar thing you're doing with LinkedIn, or what are you doing there?
Well, LinkedIn is quite a bit different than Twitter, obviously, and you know, people don't necessarily see that as a place for retail activity because it's built mostly as a professional career building site, and you know. Professionals discussing technical topics and so forth. What I always tell people is every one of those professionals is a purchaser, is a consumer. It doesn't matter that they're there because they were looking for a new job or where they were trying to find, interesting passionate about their industry. They're still consumers. And there are a ton of, well, maybe not a ton, but there are certainly, you know, at least 20 different groups on LinkedIn that are specific to writing and
really?
Authoring. And so, you know, you join those sites. But the really nice thing about LinkedIn is that you can target people by, you know, who they are, and then connect with them and start a relationship with them. And over time, you can build quite a large number of connections. In my case, I have, you know, just shy of 8,000 connections. And that's a big audience, and one I've developed over a lot of years, so I'm not suggesting somebody could get there overnight. But, you know, if you do 20 minutes a day, you'd be surprised how fast you can start to really build, you know, your audience. And if it's targeted, all the better. Now, my audience is not so targeted as, you know, purchase of fiction, because I built it over a long period of time and I was targeting different people for different reasons. But on the other, you know, the other side of that is it's a very diverse audience, and you know, many different things can, you know, might appeal to them. So I have found it to be very valuable. It's probably the single best source, other than Goodreads perhaps, for getting votes.
Really? LinkedIn you thought was better than?
Yep.
Really? I'm gonna have to do some more research on this. Cause yeah, that's surprising to me.
And you know, if you can put yourself in the position of managing a group, or creating a group, and then being able to develop the numbers, again, it's very time consuming, but can be done. You know, then you have access to the group members and the ability to send out announcements to the entire group. You can also do that on Goodreads. Goodreads is a good place to build a group of your own. And then you know, be able to announce things to that group as the manager of the group. You have to be a little careful, because Goodreads participants can get a little persnickety sometimes, and if they feel like you're promoting to them, they will flag you. So, and that can cause some problems. So just be aware of that.
Huh. So usually I kind of save the book until the end, but I know we've got a little bit of a tighter timetable today. So let's talk about the lottery. So this is the idea you took to Soups. And so what were some of the marketing homework they gave you? And then what was some of the other steps as you worked towards the publishing contract and then through publishing? I know it's in early release. And then, you know, so talk to us about that. And then I've got a few more questions about it as well.
Yeah, well, the steps they take you through, as I said earlier, are actually they're delineated at least at a very high level on the Soup site, and you know, it starts off with I think 50 votes, and you move through the process, you know, as you get, you know, 50, 100, 200, I have to get the exact you know, increments now, and at each stage they present to you a series of questions and you know, kind of homework. Series of questions that they want you to address, and you know, and they want you to be honest. And it's not like you've got to, you know, you don't do any service to you or yourself or to them by, you know, kind of embellishing. Just be honest about, you know, where you need to be, where you are rather, and where you'd like to be with, you know, the various elements of building a platform. And some of that is, you know, telling them, you know, do you have certain social media accounts? Do you have an email mailing list? You know, what assets do you have that you can bring to the table? And how you over time with the different homework, through the series of the different homework assignments, you start to see a full picture of how you develop a platform for your writing and how you're developing an audience. And you know, if you're starting out, you know, you might not. They grade you, by the way. So if you don't pass, they said, you know, go back and work on it some more. There's no deadline. You just take every time you need. And there may be some folks who, if they're starting out, you know, would need, you know, more time. I was, again, fortunate. I went through all the homeworks. Never had to redo any of them. Passed them all, you know, with the, you know, pretty high marks, and moved pretty quickly to the contract level. That said, it still took months, you know, to get all those votes. It takes time to, you know, request people to vote for you, and you know, so start off with your family. Get a list of emails with families and friends, and tell them what you're doing. Send them out, and it doesn't cost them anything. It takes literally 30 seconds for them to go out and vote for your book.
Right. So it almost sounds like it's almost like they're teaching you marketing as they have you go out and gather votes this way.
Absolutely. It's exactly what they're doing, Joseph. Exactly what they're doing.
So yeah, that sounds fantastic for a debut author. What was the appeal to you? Because I mean, it sounds like you're very versed in social media. You already had a fairly big following that you were able to bring and able to get the vote. So what was the appeal of going through Soup for a writer in your position?
Well, part of it was that I did have that following, and the Soup method, their way of doing things allowed me to leverage that. So I was very happy to be able to do that, you know, in a very systematic way, you know, with them, and use their platform to get votes and bring people in. And, you know, it's not something that's that easy to set up on your own. One of the things I have found is, you know, sure, I have a landing page with all my work detailed on it with buy buttons and the whole lot. But driving traffic to a page like that is very difficult. You know, who wants to go to just, you know, one author's, you know, page?
Right.
Even if it is a blog. You know, so what you want is a platform where there's a lot of traffic and people will come back and there's other things for them to see. It's more interactive. And this, you know, the Soup platform does that. And I really like this whole, you know, sort of non-traditional approach that they presented. You know, traditional publishers have gotten a little bit out of hand, in my opinion. You know, they kind of expect you to do everything that Soup expects you to do, but they don't necessarily give you the hand-holding. And to be honest, it's pretty hard to break into a high-end traditional publisher. Unless you have a big audience, and that audience has to be demonstrated by, you know, having sold typically tens of thousands of books before they even look at it.
Yeah, I think traditional publishing is kind of beside itself in trying to figure out what to do with digital publishing. You know, the advances offered to debut authors have dwindled into almost nothing, and so has their marketing investment into them. And a lot of like middle of the road authors who, you know, they've been doing traditional publishing for 10 years, they're not the household name, but they're leaving traditional publishing because they're basically doing their own marketing, and, you know, instead of making 14%, they can make 70%.
Exactly right. And if they have published a book and it's been successful, they already have an audience. And quite frankly, what the heck do they need with the publisher anymore? You
know? Yeah.
I mean, there's so many good self-publishing avenues, and I've explored those as well. I've published, with a company that essentially, it's a publisher, and they, you know, they have all of the bells and whistles. But you know, basically, you have to do, you can use their services, but basically, you're publishing with your own dollars, and that was, you know, that was reasonably successful in that regard, you know, with that approach. But I think the Soup approach actually is a much better one, and for all the reasons that we've already kind of, you know, gone over.
Yeah. So I guess it's because you went through Soup, I'm assuming they are taking a portion of the thing. I don't know if you can discuss your contract specifically, but I mean, did you feel like you were getting, I guess you did feel that you were getting more than just going traditional indie as you...
Oh, absolutely.
So...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But absolutely, it's a much more lucrative arrangement contractually than you would get with any, you know, publisher.
And publisher.
Even some of the self-publishing companies don't offer you as good a deal.
Right.
But you're right, I'm not at liberty to discuss the details.
Yeah, so I guess what is it that you felt Soups was offering that you wanted to partner with them rather than just going indie? Because I think some of your earlier works were just indie, right?
Yeah, they were. And the support they give you, the fact that they're putting, you know, they have skin in the game in this case. You know, they're putting money into the deal. The contract is one where they are really investing in you as an author, you know, once you get to that point. And obviously it takes some time to get there, but it was well worth it, in my case at least, to do that. And I do recommend it to certainly any author who's got a reasonable platform and a reasonable audience. But even those who don't, I mean, this is a good place to start developing that. You get the coaching,
right?
These would be their homework and so forth, And you know, the people there are very, you know, way, you know, it's very professional. But everybody I've worked with is, had one of the folks that he had working in the company was the editor, and she did a wonderful job. You know, and I've worked with a lot of editors. I'll tell you, some of them were not my favorite people. They really didn't do a very good job. But you know, you don't learn that. You don't know that until after you've had some experience with some really good editors. And the soup editor was great.
So I actually, since you brought it up, I actually did want to talk to you about your good and bad editors. I think for a lot of indies that I've interviewed don't use an editor. Some of them use
big mistake.
Some use copy editors, but I have yet to meet anyone who uses a content editor. What's your experience copy content, and how have you learned to recognize the good from the bad?
Well, I mean, it gets easier and easier to separate them out as you go along. And when you're first starting out, as I was, you know, you kind of trust the editor because, you know, I assumed they knew more than I did, and they probably did in some respects. But then as I worked with other editors, I discovered, well, the advice I got from this editor was actually contrary to, you know, what the mainstream of editing is all about. You know, so for example, with one editor I worked with, and she was very big on using a lot of adverbs and long tag, you know, dialogue tags, and she convinced me that that was, you know, the thing to do. But I was very uncomfortable with it, so, you know, I did my own searching around, and I started, you know, investigating, you know, what are the standards, and I was convinced very quickly after not very much of a search that no, that's really not the best way to approach it. And of course, I went back and started reading some, you know, some classic, you know, novels, even Hemingway type stuff, and discovered she was really dead wrong when it came to that. And I had to go through and revamp it, everything, you know, that I was working on to be more consistent with, you know, what the true standards are for the industry. So, you know, you learn through that process. I don't know that there's any one thing I could say that says, okay, if that editor says that, you know, put a nix on them. All I know is when you get a good editor, you'll know it, because that person will really help you get your, you know, find your voice, help you with your, you know, your point of view, making sure you're using the best point of view or the correct point of view, things of that nature. They'll help you, you know, be more concise in your writing. And you know, even the bad editor that I just mentioned actually was helpful in that regard, but not so helpful in other things, you know.
Yeah, thank you for that. I am actually stunned at the advice that editor was giving you. I am sorry, man. So why don't you give us kind of the hook of the book? What was the idea that you sold? Because my understanding is with soups, like, that's what you start with. You pitch an idea first. So what was the idea that was so popular?
Well, it turned out that I had already written the book by and large. I mean, there were some, you know, some additions. I was doing some refinements and so forth. But the text of this book was essentially done by the time I found soup. So it's a little atypical in that sense, I guess. It is a site where you can just float a good idea. And you don't have to really have written the book, and that's fine. That's great, because then you can be, you know, building your audience while you're working on your manuscript. In my case, I actually been working on a different manuscript while I was forwarding this idea, because it was already essentially written. And I got the idea, and I, literally, it's sitting in my living room watching television and listening to a news cast about people who had won the lottery and ended up, you know, after not very many years, worse off than they were before they won. And it just sparked me. It just sparked something in me. I said, gee, somebody should write a novel about that. And I thought to myself, maybe I'll do that. And so I started doing some research on it and finding out that, in fact, that was the case. It was one article was written not too long ago, and I think it's referenced in the book, that, you know, they took a look at, you know, people who had won the lottery, and 70% of them had lost all of their money within 3 to 4 years.
3 to 4 years? Jeez.
Yeah, 3 to 4 years. Amazing, right? You know, and I mean, there are obviously, you know, some people who manage it, who get new, but people just, you know, they just, they, you know, unless they had, you know, wealth from, you know, before they won, or somewhere along their lives, they had good training in, you know, how to manage their finances, people just generally go nuts. You know, they start buying cars, they start, you know, buying houses, they go on elaborate vacations, and then they, you know, and then they get bored, because their friends that they had no longer really don't fit together. You know, they don't have anything in common really. And people who do have money don't necessarily want to associate with them because, you know, they just want it. They didn't earn it, right? Which is a theme actually is in one of the stories. So they get isolated. Then they turn to things like alcohol and drugs. There were all kinds of stories of different things that happened to people that were just, you know, heart-wrenching. So I took some of the realities of what had happened to folks, those kinds of things, and tried to integrate them into my fictional stories, and then tried to make the stories a little more, you know, interesting by developing the relationships, between spouses and family members and that sort of thing.
Wow, well, you sold me, man. That actually, like, especially like based on your research, that's fascinating. I'll check it out. So, based on from what I've got here from Wade is you released on the 23rd of November for pre-order, and by the 25th, 2 days later, you were rated as a number one hot new release, even though the book was still just in pre-order. Can you talk about some of the things you did to achieve that, or do you feel like that's just the all the prep work with Soups was kind of what led to that?
Certainly the prep work was important, and clearly, you know, Soup had a lot to do with, you know, the promotion. But it really was, promoting the book to the people who had voted for it, promoting it through social media, letting people know that, you know, we were offering we were in the pre-order phase, and we were offering, a spiced up deal. You know, we were offering some additional bonuses when they ordered the book, and I think that the title, honestly, and the topic, tended to capture people's attention and imagination. I know every time I would say to somebody, you know, I'd be asked, well, what are you up to? And I'd say, well, I'm writing this book called The Lottery Curse. And people would, you know, do a double take and say, ooh, that's a cool title, you know, which is why I stuck with it, because I got that feedback. I think it's a combination of things. I don't think you can point to any one thing, but certainly, you know, Soup's ability to get the word out to, you know, the over 4,000 people who had voted for the book at that point, that number is growing still, was a big factor. But also, you know, I worked very hard with, you know, my social media outlets and mailing lists to, you know, to go beyond even the people who had voted for it at that point. If you have an audience, if you've built relationships, you have people who know of your work or know of you, then you can leverage that. You can, you know. And of course, there is one other secret weapon I have, and that's my mom. She sells books like nobody's business, let me tell you. And she's just, you know, she's just a retired woman, and up in years, and she never had any sales training, but she sort of gets it. It's amazing how she gets people to she sold my other books as well. She just has this sense of, you know, creating urgency and demand and. Kudos to her.
So yeah, that's great. So when does the book actually release? Because as I checked this morning, it still wasn't out.
Correct. I believe that the pre-order period will end on this Friday. I think it goes to, you know, comes off the pre-order and into being able to start to ship after that.
So great. I'll definitely check out at least the sample on Amazon once it comes out. So are you developing an audiobook for it as well? Is that in the works? Have you done it before, or what's your plan there?
I have not done it before. I have, you know, certainly toyed with the idea, but the yeah, it just never seemed to, you know, be the thing to focus on. And we don't have a plan for that immediately, because the next phase of the rollout is really to roll out the Kindle version of the book, the e-version of the book.
Right. Oh, so Friday is not a Kindle release. It's just a paperback.
No, Friday is simply, the paperback version.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and having gotten to the, you know, number one hot new release without a Kindle, is actually, I don't really, you know, make a lot of noise about this with people, but it's actually kind of a feather in our cap, because, you know,
yeah,
it's easier to get there if you're, you know, you've got a less expensive Kindle version,
yeah,
to offer as well,
yeah,
and we did not.
That is super impressive. One, you're in pre-order, and two, you don't have a Kindle version. I mean, that is super impressive to have jumped up the charts like that.
I'm very pleased with it, and we obviously are going to come out with a Kindle version, and we've talked to, I talked with Wade earlier today about, you know, some strategies around that and how to make that offer, you know, a little more appealing and compelling, but we probably won't get to that till early next year.
Wow, I
and then we have a live event, planned, although it's, you know, conceptualized, not really planned yet, but conceptualized, where we're going to probably do a, you know, a book signing in a large venue here in the Boston area where I live, and but again, the specifics of that to be announced.
So, well, great, yeah. So it really does sound like you've signed on with a traditional publisher here in the way you're describing some of these things, but like you said, they did give you a good enough contract that it still had, I guess, the dividends close enough to self-publishing that you felt it was worth the trade-off, what they were giving to what you were getting.
Absolutely. I think the trade-off is really very much a fair one, but you know, one of the better, you know, arrangements that I've encountered. So, and you know, and of course, when you first put a book up on their site and try to get votes, you know, you don't really know what they're about or what they're like. But over the course of the number of months now, especially these last 4 or 5 months, as we really got into the, you know, the negotiating the contract and you know, getting into the productions of the book and so on, you know, I really got to know these folks, and I have to say I'm very pleased.
Oh, great. So I guess our podcast is usually more focused on writing craft, but I was really interested in soups, and so I kind of wanted to discuss that with you. But so now I want to kind of talk more about writing in general with you. So first, just give us kind of a feel for your style. Like, if you would pick a household name, someone that most people would just recognize, like a John Grisham, how would you describe your own style? Who's a big name that you're kind of following in the style voice area?
Yeah, that's a little tough. I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure, and it's not because I'm so unique. I just don't know who I would really, you know, pick as somebody that would, be a good comparison without, you know, throwing people off the trail a little bit somehow.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what to tell you. I remember, you know, in our emails, looking at the, you had posed that question, and I was a little stumped then, and I'm still stumped now, unfortunately. I hate to be, you know, avoiding the question, but I don't really know how to answer it.
So, well, in the emails, I asked you, what is a book you wish you'd written? And your answer was The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And
Yeah, now that was an easy one to answer.
Yeah. So what is it you love about that book, and is there anything of that style you bring to your own writing?
Well, what I love about the book is what I guess most people love about it, you know, first of all, it's just, you know, the wonderful adventure that Mark Twain, you know, spins, but also the relationships, you know, that are depicted in the story, and, you know, the kind of notions that are in there, that, you know, things that puzzle, you know, poor Finn, you know, throughout the book. And, but then also, there's this one part of the book, which is been referred to as the good lie, where he really protects his friend, from being shackled back into slavery again by lying, and that just struck important, such an important message, you know, that, you know, there are lies and then there are lies. You know, there are things that, you know, lying is bad, but there are things worse than that, you know, and you really have to be moral, have a moral compass to understand that, you know. And then, you know, the way that Mark Twain, you know, does the dialogue with all of the, you know, the colloquial, you know, Southern things and so forth, I mean, it's just wonderful, you know. Who wouldn't love that book?
So, all right.
So, in terms of how I write, you know, the only thing I can say is I try very hard, and I think with some success. I mean, I've been told this by other reviewers and so forth. But I do have a bit of a skill when it comes to dialogue. And so, you know, and I read that book, and I've read that book at least 3 times. And you know, not that I try to emulate what Twain did there, you know, with the, you know, the kind of playing that's in the dialogue. But I do get the idea of, you know, trying to create authentic dialogue and try to moving the story forward with that dialogue in such a way that a couple of people have told me one of the things that I liked about your writing is that I want to turn the next page. You know, there's not a lot of dead space. You know, if I had one thing I'd like people to think about me, you know, is the dialogue and the fact that, you know, the stories are page turners.
Good, good. And so in developing the dialogue, is there any like exercises you've done, or was there any like lecture you attended, or anything specifically that really helped you sharpen your dialogue writing skills?
You know, I think I've had this habit all my life, almost as far back as I can remember, anyway, where I make up dialogue in my head all the time. You know, and it doesn't have to be about, you know, there's something that's upsetting me, you know, or whatever, and I just have conversations, you know, between myself and other people, and sometimes they're fictitious people, but a lot of times they're real people that, you know, I wish I could, you know, have that person in front of me. And sometimes it's like a political person or something, you know, or a person who's, you know, got a certain point of view on a topic, and they're kind of arguing with them. And I think that's part of it right there. It's just, I just do it all the time. And the other part is, I have a very large extended family. I have a lot of dialogue going on in the family all the time, as I grew up and even now. And so I got the feel for different voices, and I grew up with a lot of women in my family, and I tend to be able to, I think, capture the female point of view pretty well. Although I have to sometimes check in with my daughter or my wife to make sure that I got it right.
So, yeah, I do think that's a good point, is that, you know, as far as like writing concerns, you kind of have practiced the dialogue all the time, because that's how you work through thoughts in your own head.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, instead of, you know, some people think, you know, kind of conceptually, so I think in dialogue. I mean, it's kind of weird, but, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to admit that to anybody, but I guess that is part of, you know, what helps me.
Yeah, and well, and out of that comes the ability to write it, you know, really well, because you do it so often. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, having, you know, thoughts in your head and so forth, one of the pieces of advice I give to authors is, you get a thought about something you're writing, or you get a thought about a new topic, write it down. Write it down right then and there. Don't waste even 2 minutes. Write it down, because I can tell you how many times I didn't do that, and then it's lost, and I thought to myself, oh, darn, you know, why didn't I write that down? So, you know, I got, you know, folders full of, you know, ideas and thoughts and bits and pieces of dialogue and scenes and so forth, you know, that I may never use, but I write everything down, you know. I've even been known to jump out of bed, you know, at 2 a.m. and come down, to my study and start typing, because I got a, you know, crazy idea and I don't want to lose it.
Huh. So, I mean, I'm pretty good, but I mean, if I'm in bed, I'll like write like 1 or 2 words on a notepad and then just go back to sleep. Like, that should be enough to remind me in the morning.
I've done that as well, Joseph, and that does work very well. As long as you have like a, you know, some kind of a, you know, like a reminder, a cue of some type that, you know, then will spark a larger idea. Yeah, no, that's actually a very good idea, and it does get, make sure, you know, you don't lose as much sleep that way, so that's a good, good way to approach it.
So any other advice you would give to young authors? And then when you first started writing, what would you go back and tell your beginner self?
Let's see. I would tell my beginner self to look at some great writing before you put, you know, and structures, things in structure. So when I first started writing, I had no intention of becoming a fiction author. I wrote some stories about a few cars that I was trying to sell on eBay.
That's awesome.
we had a couple of cars. I mean, I'm no longer collecting cars, but for a while I was. I own, the only car I have left out of my collection is a '72 Buick Stellar Custom, which is a great little machine. But I had a whole bunch of other things. So for example, the picture on the book, The Uncommon Heroes in Cars, that's a 1970 Jaguar E-Type Roadster. And I had that in my garage for a while. And then on the other book, there's an Austin Healey. And I had that on my... So over time, I had to sell some of these cars with downsizing and so forth. And my mom and dad had a car that they had a Lincoln that they needed to get rid of, you know. Make a long story short, I had read this research article where they had bought a bunch of gotchies from a flea market. They wrote a story about each one of these things and then sold it on eBay with the story, and they got about 10 times what they bought the item for on eBay because of the story.
Are you serious?
Seriously, no, this is true. I don't remember the reference at this point, but it was an actual piece of research that was done. It was very interesting, and I didn't expect to get multiples, you know, of the car value certainly, but I thought, well, I'll get more eyeballs on my eBay, you know, auction, and I did. I got, you know, I got like 1,300 people, you know, looking at one of the car auctions, and I sold the cars, and the stories were pretty, you know, pretty fun, and then I started writing stories about some of the other cars I've owned over the time, and then one of my kids said to me, this is my daughter, she said, Dad, you know, you could put all those stories in a book. Honestly, that never even occurred to me. And I thought, you know, I could do that. So, and long story short, that's where the first book came from. But I hadn't done my homework in terms of knowing how to format dialogue appropriately and so forth and so on. So the advice I give myself is, you know, make sure you learn that basic stuff so that, you know, it looks professional before you go off and publish it.
Yeah. Excellent. That's crazy, man. Started out just writing stories for eBay.
Yep. The only thing I want to reiterate, Joseph, is this idea of using an editor. You know, we touched on it certainly, but it's so important that I really feel it's worth reiterating. I have heard lots of indie writers say, I can't afford to spend money on an editor, or I don't need an editor, I'm a good editor of my own. No, you're not. You cannot edit your own stuff. You can't.
I agree.
Period.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's something I tell my friends all the time, because they'll send me stuff to edit and be like, you're a really good editor. You can just edit your own stuff. I was like, no, my brain will auto-correct most of my mistakes when I try to do it myself.
Exactly. And everybody has blind spots, you know? I mean, there are things that, you know, sometimes I see after pointed out to me, but it's like, well, geez, I wish I had thought of it, you know? And some of it's, you know, just how to be more succinct, for example. You know, how you can say the same thing in many fewer words. You know, I mean, I read the manual, you know, the Elements of Style manual, and it talks about, you know, how to be succinct and so forth. I read that thing, I must have read that thing 4 times. But does that mean I can do it? No. And then the other thing that I would say is, okay, you've written it, you've gone over it yourself a million times, you feel it's pretty clean, now you have your editor work with you, you know, and now you've got it in better shape, you're still not done. Have a proof for you to look at it. Because there isn't even one editor on the planet that will catch everything.
So that's a good point. Do you have any tips for finding a good editor? I mean, you mentioned you had experiences with bad editors. And then you said you'll know it when you have a good one. But what about like the filtering process? Do you have any recommendations there? I know.
What process?
Like finding a good editor. Like for me, when I take on clients, one of the things I always do is I give them a sample. You know, they send me a page, I edit it, right. I send it back. And part of that is so they can see what they're getting, but part of it is also I make a judgment call on whether I'll take the client because I need to appreciate the work at least a certain level. Otherwise, I just can't invest in it well.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I think sometimes editors just take the work because they need the money, and that's unfortunate. If you can't really invest a little bit of yourself in it, then you're probably not going to do that great a job. So I think one of the questions I would ask an editor and going forward, and I certainly did this with the Soup folks, is, you know, do you like what you're reading? Do you feel like the stories are compelling at all, you know?
Yeah.
To know the answer to that, you move forward. With respect to, you know, finding a good person, it's exactly the process that you talked about, which I, again, you know, if I was going back and giving my earlier writing self advice, I would say, do what Joseph just said. Send them a chapter. Make, you know, even if you have to pay for a small amount, you know. A lot of editors will do a little bit of free work, but, you know, may not be enough, you know. But so get them to work on, you know, something. The other thing is you can join some, you can send your work to some of these contests, and they will have editors look at, you know, the first 10,000 words or something, and they'll give you a lot of feedback on it. And you'll learn from that, you know, when you talk to an editor you're going to pay, whether they're really catching on to what's needed.
I guess, do you use the same editor? I mean, you mentioned that you use the Soups editor, but before that, did you have like a certain editor you liked to work with, and where did you find them?
I did find a couple of editors I really liked to work with, and over time I found, you know, one editor who was even better than the last one, kind of thing, you know, and it just, again, it's just experience, time. You know, certainly you want to shortcut that if you're starting out. You don't want to, you know, go through the same process maybe that I did because, you know, there was some real wasted, you know, time and money. But it's an education, and I don't regret it, certainly. I'm sorry, did I answer your question?
Where did you find the good editors? There a website or just a friend's recommendation? How did you find these ones that were really working well for you?
Well, again, LinkedIn is a great source. There are a ton of people who will, you know, who put on their profile that they are editors, and you can search for people based on, there's a screen on LinkedIn for you to search out people, and you can search them out, and you can look at their bios, and you can look at some of the work that they've done in the past. You can see what recommendations they may have or not have. So you can really screen people very, very well. And then you can get, you know, I mean, there are a lot of price points out there. I've had good editors work with me and do a whole book for, you know, as little as $800 or $900, and I've had other bids which I never accepted for as much as $7,000 for virtually the same amount of editing. So, you know, I don't know if that $7,000 editor was so much better than, you know, was that person like 8 or 9, 10 times better than the other editor? I don't know, but I certainly wasn't going to pay that much.
Right.
But I have found editors, and, you know, for a book anywhere in the, I don't know, 70,000, 80,000 word, you know, range, expect to pay $1,200 to $1,600.
Before we close out here, why don't you tell us where to find you and maybe about some of your other works and whatnot?
Well, obviously you can find me on Amazon, and, you know, it's probably the easiest place to go look at what I've written. Most people have accounts, so it's just easy. If you're going to actually make a purchase, you can just do it quickly. So I won't bog people down with a lot of different, you know, sites. I mean, I'm on Barnes & Noble and a few other sites, Smashwords and other places. But, you know, if I had to say, point you to one place, and if you want to see my my author page on Amazon, just take out the V in my name and type in Cary Azara. And I just did it a little while ago to check, and it pops up, so you will find that there.
So, and
I'm
that
not sure why that is.
That is Cary Azara, that's Carey Azzara, if you're gonna search him up there.
That's correct, thank you. With respect to what I'm working on next, I actually have a number of things that are in different stages of completion, and Wade and I are kind of looking at some options for how to present that on the soup site, but I won't get into that because it's too early. We haven't made decisions. The novel that I've recently completed and I'm in the editing process with is a novel called Caitlin's Mourning, and it's a story about a family in Maine, and it spans five generations. And I got the idea for the story, but actually when I was in Maine, I was at a conference and I was presenting some of the ideas that we talked about for social media to other authors. And anyway, over lunch, one of the women there was telling me about her son and her grandfather. And apparently, for reasons I really don't know, or, she wasn't clear about or comfortable saying, he didn't have a father and he had no grandparents. So his grandfather, or her grandfather really, his great-grandfather, was his only role model. And I thought, what an intriguing idea, for a story between, a young boy, a child, and an elderly man. And I took that idea, and I ran with it. Now, the story doesn't involve only around the two of them. It involves around the whole family. But it does revolve around how that came to be for the main character, Caitlin, actually there's three main characters, but, she starts off as the main character in the book, and how that gap in the generations came to be, and then, the relationship between this boy and his great-grandfather, and then, as the years go by, he grows up, and what his adventures are. Sorry. And the story ends with a pretty dramatic rescue at sea.
Oh, great. That was our interview with Kerry Azzara, and as he mentioned, you can find him on Amazon. He's written several books there. There are several that are just 99 cents, and those are actually selections from his collections. So Haley's Gift and Eight Other Extraordinary Tales. So the 99 cents ones are just shorter stories from those collections and from his ones about cars. So, so that's what those are if you're checking out his work there. And if you want to check out Soups, I do recommend it. It sounded great as the way it kind of walks you through everything there. And as always, you can find us at startwriting.space. The episodes are up there, and so are the show notes. So there aren't really notes for the author interviews, but for the discussions, as always. And if you want to email us, you can do that at pleasestartwriting@gmail.com. And we check it about twice a week, just because there's not a lot of traffic there. In fact, we rarely get an email. If you want to write us, that'd be great. If you've got questions, or if you're having trouble finding something we've referenced and you need a link, or if you want to suggest a topic, we are always interested. Usually we take about a month of research on any one project, but if you make a recommendation, imagine it might be 2 or 3 months out, particularly if it's not one we have a lot of base research on already, because we like to be thorough. If you've listened to the discussion podcast, we're very thorough as we dig into topics, and thanks for listening.